Hi, this is Christopher Perrin with Inside Classical Education. On this podcast program, I interview a variety of leaders, administrators, and educators on topics relating to classical Christian education and its ongoing recovery and renewal in the 21st century. Archives of previous interviews can be found at our blog and podcast site at www.insideclassicaled.com. Hi, this is Christopher Perrin. We're here today with Peter Bauer. Peter is the Director of Admissions and Events at Westminster Academy in Memphis, Tennessee. He's also served there as the Director of Institutional Advancement. Peter, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Chris. It's a great honor, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's great to have you on this program as well. Tell us a little bit about your biography. What have you done in your professional career? And then maybe you could transition into how you came to be involved with classical Christian education.
Great. Be happy to. I began really my professional career at the college level. Having graduated, I entered the admissions office at the school from which I graduated, and for 5 years worked on recruitment for students on a national level, traveled throughout the country, and recruited students for a small liberal arts school located in Ohio. After about 5 years of that, I moved to a position at a what would be considered an elite private school in the Philadelphia area. And at that school, I did primarily college guidance work. So at this point now, I had done some work on the college side of college admission, and now I got to do some work on the college guidance side at a high school level for a private school. And while there, I taught economics and math, and coached, and then I moved from college guidance into their admissions office, did a lot with the marketing and communications, and began to get involved in some development work at this school. After about 7 or 8 years there, I was contacted by another school in Philadelphia that was in a predominantly minority and economically disadvantaged area, and was asked to initiate and implement a community involvement program in this particular area within probably 10 blocks of the school. And again, this was a very elite private school. They typically sent about a third of their graduates to Ivy League caliber schools within about 10 blocks of this very high-powered school. There were probably 4 soup kitchens and a number of social assistance programs, things like that. So for 5 years, I developed a community involvement program, and then after getting that up and running, I was formally asked to begin work in their development office as the Associate Director of Development, working primarily in leadership giving and annual fund. After, again, about 7 years of that, I was contacted by a gentleman who was beginning an entrepreneurial mission program in Budapest, Hungary, and was asked to be the stateside director of that program, and that involved primarily communications, marketing, and fundraising. I did that for 3 years, and we could not sustain my position, I was released, and upon being released, we had always considered moving to Memphis, Tennessee. My wife has family from here, and I figured I might as well be unemployed in Memphis. So we moved down to Memphis, and I began work first as a consultant with a small college here in town, and then initiated consulting with Westminster Academy, which turned into a full-time position 8 years ago. So I've had the privilege of really working in primarily the independent school world, and with some heady institutions. The 2 schools I worked with in Philly were over 150 years old, so I joke that I have 300 years of experience. So.
Well, let me ask you this question, Peter. What percentage of the skills that you acquired working with those independent schools are applicable to a classical Christian school? And maybe another way of getting at the question is, what's different about helping advance a classical Christian school over against some of those other kinds of institutions you have worked for?
Sure. That's a great question. I would say that 100% of the skills I learned in working for secular independent schools are applicable to classical Christian schools. Of course, you know, the great joy and pleasure of working for a classical Christian school is that the things that I am seeking to develop and promote are much more in line with my own worldview. Hmm. So I think, you know, one of the great benefits that I've had is in coming to a young school and having had these experiences, being able to apply them to a growing school has really helped, I think, Westminster kind of get moving from one point up a couple of notches very quickly.
Hmm. And what would you describe as the heart and soul of advancing a classical Christian school? What's the work like? What are the main things that you need to be about on a weekly and monthly basis to help grow a classical Christian school?
That's a great question. I think the number one thing, Chris, is that you are clear about what it is that you're promoting and developing, and that there is a real clarity on what this model of educating, what this model of education is all about. So, for example, in arriving at Westminster Academy, honestly, the mission statement was a little bit ambiguous, and so in working through that, I think Westminster Academy came out of that process with a very powerful mission statement. Also, we worked very hard to define what we as Westminster Academy meant as classical Christian education, our own definition and context of where we were. And so I would say the first thing that is most important about promoting classical Christian education is having a well-defined idea of what it is that your particular school is promoting in terms of this model of education. And then I think in being clear about that, it's understanding how to clearly promote that in materials, in open houses, and in everything you do. Reinforcing that, because for many parents and many of our constituents, it's a new thing. So I think working toward being able to be concise and precise in what this means is a huge benefit in growing a classical school.
It sounds like in order to be clear and then to be concise and precise, you've got to communicate your mission very well and very clearly to all of your existing staff, so that everyone is essentially saying the same kinds of things in various venues. Am I right about that? And if so, how do you go about accomplishing that?
I would say that is exactly right. It really doesn't serve an institution well if at the highest level they're able to communicate that vision, but with people that essentially are boots on the ground and have maybe more contact with people, they're not able to do that. And I think Westminster spent an awful lot of time on the front end working through at administrative level and board level what our mission and vision was, again, for us, and what our definition of classical Christian education was, and then taking a considerable amount of time in teacher in-service in reinforcing that. And I would say the next step that we did, which has been very profitable, was we require... and this happens primarily in the lower school, the teachers communicate once each week with a newsletter. And we require that at least two of those each month, that newsletter that goes home to the parents is saying something about how our classical model is specifically being implemented in the curriculum. And so we are trying to reinforce through requiring our teachers to do that, for them to be thinking consistently about, okay, how does this model get worked out in the classroom, but then also having to articulate that to the parents. And so you begin to build this momentum of working toward everybody giving the same message and validating and reinforcing it in many different ways.
I'm thinking of a military analogy at the moment where a commander may give his intent for a mission, and then that's got to trickle down through all the entire officer corps until the sergeants on the ground and the corporates and the privates all understand what their role is and understand how they're fulfilling a mission. That's challenging, though, isn't it, to get that to get the mission clearly transferred to the entire organization. What are some of the challenges to doing that? And you've mentioned one way that you've done that by teacher in services, but what about communicating directly to parents? What about the secretarial support staff and other administrators? What kind of a role do they play in keeping that mission clear?
That's great. One of the things I think that I would warn against, and I think probably many folks realize this, but maybe not enough to do, particularly in an institutional setting, is you cannot ever assume that if you've communicated it once, that's something that people are going to remember, or in this day and age, that even if you've communicated it once, that anybody's ever paid attention. And so one of the things, again, that we do here is whenever we have an opportunity, we try and reinforce our mission and vision in a very precise way. So here would be an example. We have a saying around here, never waste a stamp. And what we mean by that is anytime any information is included in an envelope, it gives us an opportunity to reinforce what we're doing.
Hmm.
A further example about that, and a particular example would be, we used to send our tuition billing out simply as a bill.
Hmm.
And what we move toward is within that bill, there is a brief letter from our accountant.
Hmm.
And that accountant essentially says something along the lines of, you know, you'll find enclosed this bill, and we are just so thrilled that you as parents have chosen once again to choose an education that is teaching the heart, mind, and soul to those things, toward those things that are good, true, and beautiful. Again, what we're trying to do is ask every one of our people to continually be reminding ourselves, as well as all of our constituents, in as many ways as possible, about what we are doing. And I think this is particularly challenging in classical schools because we tend to talk sometimes in a different language. You talk grammar, rhetoric, and logic. So there's an additional, I think, responsibility for us as educators and administrators to make sure that we're not assuming that people are getting things one time and that we are consistently, constantly reinforcing our message. Everything we do, whether it's an open house, whether it's a parents' night, whether it's in our on our website or in our materials, or all the way down to a tuition bill that has a letter that reinforces the same message.
Hmm. To pull up another example, I wonder how you might describe a scenario like this at Westminster. Let's say you're having a spring concert, and the choirs at the school are singing for the community, which will be made up of mainly parents, grandparents, students, and friends, and faculty. How would that event be utilized to help support the mission of Westminster?
Ed, are you mean in terms of kind of the mission vision, or more fundraising, or
no? I'm thinking again of this of the mission and vision of the school. How could a choir concert have anything to do with Westminster's mission and vision as a classical Christian school?
That's a great question. And the first answer to that is certainly whatever is performed should reflect directly our mission and vision. So I would expect certain type of material to be included in the concert, and I would probably be very surprised if some other things were that, based on the mission, probably shouldn't be. So again, even something as what may be considered mundane as a concert that the school is putting on should always people always ought to be asking: is this reflecting who we are? Everything we do should. Secondly, I would say that everything from say the headmaster standing up and introducing the program would include comments that are directly in line with the mission and vision. In other words, this is why we bring music into our culture. We bring it in because it reflects those things that are beautiful. This is something that nourishes the souls of our students. In a culture today which believes that something is good simply because we like it, we stand opposed to that and say, no, things are good, and we should be able to defend it. And therefore, as the headmaster, I stand before you this evening and am thrilled to bring before you another picture terms of sound that reflects those things that we believe are good, true, and virtuous. So again, reinforcing, you know, now I've received a letter from the accountant that's reinforcing that. Now I'm in front of a headmaster who's reinforcing this in a music concert. And I may get a letter from the head of the upper school that is talking about discipline and is, again, putting it in context, always in context, of our particular mission and vision of way of educating children.
So when you say every activity, you really mean every activity is an opportunity to support and to clarify that mission?
I would say every single activity. Everything from a sports event to, you know, the second graders doing a tree report, to a study hall, to, you know, again, open houses, new parent oriented, any and everything we do, we should be able to relate to how we are doing it and why we are doing it in context of our mission and vision. I think many institutions lose their way because they do not take the time and energy, and it can involve considerable time and energy, to stop and say, why are we doing this, and, you know, does it fit our mission and vision?
Are there any tools that you've developed to keep your staff intentional on those kinds of issues? You know, is there a worksheet, for example, that maybe you work through? How do you ensure that that time and energy is given to do this?
That's another great question. I would say that we don't have a formal formal process in place yet. But what I can tell you is we are moving toward what we hope will be a very helpful process, and my best description for that is it's worth considering something that we call a decision grid. And the way that would work, Chris, is that, you know, oftentimes it's interesting in a board meeting or in an administrative meeting, you might make a decision differently at the beginning of the meeting or at the end just because people are tired, or it may be that some people aren't there that typically represent a specific point of view. And so one of the things that we're talking about doing is a decision grid, and all that would be is that any programmatic decision or curricular decision that needs to be made would automatically be run through a discipline of a series of questions. So let me just throw out an example. Let's say that somebody has approached us and asked us if we would begin a Spanish program. Currently, Westminster doesn't have a Spanish program, and for who we are, we're not sure it fits. So we would ask the first question, and that first question would be, if we don't have a Spanish program, are we still classical and Christian? And so the first answer to that really drives us to the point of saying, who are we really as a classical Christian school, and is something like a Spanish program core to that? So the answer is, it's not core. Then we need to ask an additional series of questions that say, okay, if it's not core, why would we even consider doing this? And so, you know, if some of those questions might be, okay, it's not critical to a classical Christian education as we define it, but there may be something about who we think our ideal graduates should be that this contributes to that in some significant way. The next question might be, all right, can you please articulate then what the main reason for considering this program is? So again, on and on, we would lead it through a series of questions. Here's an interesting question. How will the inclusion of this program be viewed 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 100 years from now? Another question might be, what are the motives for this program? And so to answer your question is, we are trying to develop something that would force us into the discipline of asking very specific questions about potential additions to programs, you know, that again would make us be very intentional. I think the backstory to that is, too often we will add things that take time, energy, and resources away from other things. And that's usually not the context we think of them in. We think of them, gee, this will be a great addition. Well, it'll be great for everybody. Not realizing that down the road we have compromised something.
Now, Peter, let me let me make a move to a related topic.
Sure.
It sounds to me like all of this work that you put into clarifying the mission, speaking to it at every opportunity, is at least from one perspective, is continuing to use marketing language, sell classical Christian education to your existing families.
Right.
And because it is something new and novel, we haven't all been educated classically, so we need this kind of education, even while our kids are in school. But it sounds to me as well that that must have another effect or impact in helping advance the school to the surrounding community, because as parents get educated, as they understand what the mission is, they are going to be your best promoters out there in the surrounding community. Am I right about that? And how does that work?
I would say you're absolutely right about it. There's no question that the greatest funnel into our admissions program is through word of mouth. What's interesting about that, though, and I don't think this will surprise you or others, that it is not easy to put in a very quick and easy way. Maybe we ought to call it a McClassical way. Thinking of McDonald's and just being able to package everything real neatly, it's a challenge in that respect. So again, what we try and do is we try and make sure that when we, as we reinforce this, we're giving parents information that they can share with others. But yes, it's clear to us that our growing reputation in the Memphis area has been as a result of word of mouth and parents being able to talk about what we're doing here in a way that I think that woos parents, other prospective parents, that intrigues them. And along those lines, I would say that probably our best selling point are our students who are out in the community. And literally, we are hearing here in the admissions office, I met one of your kids, and there was something special about them.
That's excellent. Now, could you speak further, Peter, about how you work to find good-fitting families for a classical Christian school like Memphis Academy?
Yeah. And again, I think first thing is we want all of our public faith to be reflective of who we are in terms of our mission and vision. So, you know, how do we attract people? Well, we want what they read in an ad or in any materials that we publish to match with what we're doing here and, in essence, to brand us a certain way. So Westminster Academy did something I think a little bit unique, and that is when we began to talk about who we are and how that should be represented to the outside world, we intentionally decided that all of our materials would be black and white. And the reason for that is we did not want to, in some respects, compete with the other fine independent schools in this area who all were producing four-color, super-duper, glossy, neat admissions materials. To kind of circle back to your question, how do we attract parents? We are attracting parents by making sure that we are representing ourselves in a way that we think matches who we are. The other aspect of that is if you were to look at our advertising and our website, those types of public faces, we try and be very consistent in how we're representing ourselves, in that we try and do all things well, that the feel of our materials are classic, are sharp, and speak to the heart of who we are. So in our advertising print media, we very rarely have pictures, but we have very, what I would call, provoking quotes. For instance, from the Dorothy Sayre article, one of our quotes that we use in our ads is, for the sole true end of education is simply this, to teach men how to learn from themselves, and whatever instruction fails to do this is effort spent in vain. And I think as a result of trying to be very consistent and trying to be appear different and distinct in the things we do, we are appealing to a certain type of family, even in the materials that we're presenting.
I know that your website is also done in black and white.
Yes. Yeah, and again, we want to be consistent in the the way that we promote ourselves, because we think that builds a strong brand, if you want to use that word.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there should be consistency, but we have we've tried to avoid. Well, maybe that's the wrong way to put it. What we've tried to do is to establish ourselves as something distinct,
mm-hmm.
and so we want our ads to be distinct. We want when people land on our website, we want them to go, "Oh, this is different."
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that's very helpful. Okay. I was intrigued when I first saw your website a few years ago, because even though it's black and white, it's done very artistically and artfully, and it does pull one in, and it seems to also perhaps communicate clarity in a world of kaleidoscopic changing color.
Yeah.
That's, I think, helpful.
Yeah. And in fact, it's interesting. We're doing another iteration of our website, and we're going even more simple.
Interesting.
And part of that is we believe that, you know, what a lot of schools try and do is they try and sell everything to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe classical Christian education is simple, it's powerful, it's proven, and it's purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
And that that can be communicated in a very simple way, but a very enticing way.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, when somebody arrives on our website or looks at our materials, we want them to have the sense that gee, this isn't all that complicated, mm-hmm. and it is different, and there is a sense of simplicity to it. But the words and the way we use the words are very powerful.
Hmm. Well, Peter, what would you say to a new school that say is maybe 1 year old up to say 6, 7, or 8 years old, but still does not have a full-time development director, say. We've got a busy headmaster and some support staff and maybe another administrator all working to do several things, including admissions and advancement. What are their priorities need to be, and what kind of advice would you give to them?
Sure. I think, my first advice would be understand that it's likely that 90% of your funding will come from 10% of your constituents. And the reason that that is important is you do have limited time, energy, and resources, and so what you need to do is concentrate on those who have the capability and the desire to support your work in that possible 10% group.
Hmm.
So if it were me, I would try and sit with my board or other influencers or networkers within a community and try and generate names of those that are capable of giving significant funds and bring them into the network and concentrate on leadership giving. On the other hand, though, I would say to a new school, make sure that on some consistent basis, whether it's 3 or 4 times a year or 5, every single person on your mailing list is getting some sort of update and gentle ask to participate in supporting the school. So, again, as a new school, you're trying to target folks and that have greater ability, and then spending individual time with them to answer their questions and tell them about what you're doing. But then don't forget that at least at some level, people should be hearing from you at least 3 or 4 times a year in some way.
Hmm. Speaking of those leadership donors, that 10% who will provide 90% of funding. Could you speak further about how you find and cultivate those kinds of donors?
Sure. The way to think about it is as an archery target, and your center of the target, the bullseye, you're trying to think about those people that are most closely connected to your mission and vision or would have the greatest affinity for it. So, for example, when I think about that bullseye, Westminster Academy, I'm going to take our directory of current parents, and I am going to try and work through that list of current parents and identify those people I think have the most significant means, and then I will try and set up possibly an individual appointment with them. Another area in that bullseye would be grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Typically speaking, when we have a grandparent day, our grandparents are absolutely astounded at what their grandchildren are doing and will often say, I thought, the education that I had was dead. but they're seeing aspects of the education that they had when they were children coming back, and they're just thrilled. So in that target, then, I'm going to try and gather people around me who might know these grandparents and say, okay, of these grandparents, which ones do we believe have significant means? So now I've targeted current parents in that target. I've targeted grandparents. And again, these are people, because they have children here or grandchildren, are the most likely to respond to some sort of appeal. The next level in that target area, then, would be to think within our community, what sort of people would have the greatest affinity for what we're doing? And so we would think of believers. We would think of believers who may have may be involved in education in some way, Christian education or even broader education. We may think of people in the Christian community who are evidencing concern about the state of our country. But anybody that we can think about within our community who we think, if they heard what we were doing, would say, I've been waiting my whole life to support something like that. So now I've got a list that I'm going to call that bullseye, that may be 15 people or 500, and I need to begin to then prioritize that list. And I'm going to prioritize that list based on, of these people, who is the highest means, who is the greatest affinity, and who is easiest to get to. So, again, then it's just a matter of the science of development is working through that list. The art of development is being able to tell a good story.
Could you tell us a good story about some donors who were cultivated and eventually decided that they wanted to invest in Westminster Academy?
Sure. I'll give a couple examples. There is a parent who actually, when I visited with him, was the parent of three alums. I knew that he was very pleased with the education that his three daughters received. I believed him to be a man of significant means. I was aware that his father-in-law had recently passed away. And as a result of just kind of keeping my ears to the ground and trying to be aware of information that was out there, knew that his father-in-law had supported his own children, meaning his father-in-law's grandchildren, the donor I was about to visit with his children, in their education. So when I met with this man, had a very nice visit. Again, this very casual, but at one point I said to him, listen, I would like you to consider something for me. I would like you to consider investing $100,000 into a tuition endowment fund. And I want you to know that all true giving giving begins with leaders who are willing to step out. And I would like you to think about naming this tuition endowment after your father-in-law. And, you know, the power behind good development work is being able to identify what we think of as people's hot buttons. And all we're saying is, really, with a hot button, we're saying we want to give them the greatest opportunity to influence folks in the way that's most meaningful to them. And so in being able to contextualize this possible gift in a way that was particularly meaningful to him, meaning his children had been supported in their education. This is an opportunity for him to support other people's children. His father-in-law participated in that, and he wanted to honor both his father-in-law and his wife. And so that resulted in the beginning of our tuition assistance endowment 3 years ago as a school that was only 10 years old at that time, beginning a full endowment fund.
Excellent. What do you think the prospects are, Peter, for classical Christian schools to grow in an environment, in an economic environment, where private schools are seeing significant decreases in enrollment?
I think the prospects are absolutely fantastic. And the reason I say that is it is a development officer's dream, and in maybe a more crude term, a salesman's dream. To be able to have a product, a again, you know, if you want to talk about in those terms, that is easily differentiable. And what we have to offer donors or prospective donors who want to support education, who want to see culture influenced toward those things that are good, true, and beautiful, their options are limited. And so we offer to prospective donors who have any sort of affinity for improving education, just generally, but for those who truly understand that our culture is a train wreck waiting to happen, if it isn't already one, that this is indeed a significant opportunity to return culture to its roots. So I think the opportunities for classical Christian education in an environment which seems hostile in some respects, meaning economically, as well as thinking that you know, culture is headed a different direction, people are more careful with their dollars because of the economy, and I think there are more people than we realize that do understand that as particularly education is headed for a train wreck, they are looking for trains that are running on the right tracks, full speed ahead, and I think that's what classical Christian education has to offer. So I think we're in a tremendous position, even though at its kind of initial purview doesn't seem that way at all.
And it sounds to me as well that you're saying there are people with means who are looking for places to give.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think many are so disheartened with what they see, again, specifically in education and sadly in some respects Christian education, with you know, there are certain things that are being diluted. I think, again, classical Christian education, by God's grace and mercy, rises above all of those and is saying, in essence, there's something out there that's worthy of your support. It's what you've been looking for to support. It's something you can get excited about. It's making a difference.
I remember discovering a few years into my career as a head of school that there actually were people with significant means who had problems. And their problem was they knew they wanted to give some of their money away, but it was a problem figuring out just how to wisely give it.
Yep.
And that was kind of a new realization for me, that it is actually a challenge to have some resources and not have great opportunities to give it away. Well, Peter, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. If someone wanted to contact you, would you be willing to receive a phone call or an email from an administrator or somewhere who might want to speak with you?
I would be thrilled to hear from anybody that would want you know, any additional information on any of the things we've visited about or whether there are other things that I can help with. That would be a thrill.
Well, then how can folks get in contact with you?
I'd be happy to receive a phone call here at school, and that would be 901-380-9192. I'd also be happy to receive email, and my email address is pbaur, that's P-B-A-U-R, at wamemphis.com. pbaur@wamemphis.com.
Well, thank you, Peter. I certainly encourage those listeners who are trying to develop a development program to contact Peter. He'd be a great resource to ask for some advice and to consult with. So once again, thank you to Peter Bauer, the Director of Admissions and Events at Westminster Academy, for joining us in this interview.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.